Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, March 9th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is a sunny 63 degrees with blue skies and probably the nicest day in the last 6 months here in upstate New York. So it's put me in a good mood, but it has sent my allergies into a tailspin. Sorry I wasn't here the last few days. Life got in the way. Just lots of things going on with the family and the house and the animals and the holidays and whatever else. It just gets to where between the endless technical issues that just appear for no reason whatsoever. And, life, I don't know. I just have to take a break every once in a while. One thing, though, that I did accomplish before I disappeared for a few days is that we just kicked off 5 new shows on the network. And, yeah, that kind of took me out because it was 2 weeks of double and triple timing it to get everything done. So just make sure you check some of the new shows out. We have, and I'm looking, if you go to ucy.tv/shows, you will see I got all the banners in there now. Mr. Clint Richardson started a couple weeks ago. We started running his full from the very beginning archives. Clint gave us access to those in a very nice spreadsheet with descriptions for every single show. We have Greek News on Demand with Jonathan, and that is airing on Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern. And that is going to be, I think, a really great inside as to what is going on in the EU and especially Greece. Greece is kind of what started the entire dominoes tipping over in the EU. El Mazda News with Brad, and that is airing on Monday nights before Brandon Tuberville's show. So that is at 8 p.m. Eastern. A few weeks back, Jay's Analysis with Jay Dyer. Jay is airing Sunday nights at 8 p.m. after Dr. Simon. I also plugged Random Replay, I think, for Jay's, because there's a lot of material in there right now to cover on Thursday night. Mr. Chuck Horton from Double Cross. Thank you, Chuck. Andrew, for all the years that you guys broadcast, you were one of our very first shows. And Chuck has finally retired to go into non-retirement to run his new business. So we lost Chuck, but we gained some others. So yeah, we changed that up a bit. We put Jay's Analysis in there. And we also brought back Mr. Chuck Ocelli. Chuck Ocelli is going to be airing now in the afternoons on Tuesday and Thursday from 3 to 5 p.m. So it'll be the show before my show. And Chuck does 5 days a week live on American Freedom Radio. He sends me, or going to be sending me, his week's worth of shows. And then I'm just going to pick two. We'll see all the guests and stuff. We'll pick two good ones. And we'll plug those in there on Tuesday and Thursday. So I think that'll be great. Great sprinkle of a lot of information. I also made a page. If you didn't see it, there's one for Mae Brussel, because we run her on the weekends. I made one last night for Bill Cooper and a banner. Check out my banner because I thought it came out pretty sweet. And, of course, we have Mr. Will Roberts. I need to get him a page. And I need to see if there's, you know, I've looked a few times and I haven't been able to find too much information. You know, a lot of people have fan pages or full-blown archives. And I haven't seen too much out there. So, I don't know. I have a couple years' worth of archives that were donated from Doug Owen of Oracle, and I don't remember what that girl's name was. There was a girl that showed up here shortly after we started airing them, and she also sent me a few years worth of archives, so there were some missing that I was able to recover with her archives as well. But anyway, we have everything that Will did on Oracle here also, and that runs in the afternoons. So anyway, just so you know, there's been definitely some mix-ups. I don't know. There's more coming. Mr. Brandon Tuberville is always working on finding us new shows. So we'll see how that goes. Anyway, so please don't hold it against me for needing a couple days off, because I definitely did. But I'm ready to rock and roll today. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show Pentagon Hackathon, Biological Computer, and Robo Rescue Roach. And yeah, we heard about how Google, and I don't even know what he is. You know, they say it's the ex-CEO, former CEO of Google, is now on an advisory board for the Pentagon. But it's not that he's not affiliated with Google anymore. He's taken over as like prime poobah for the full-blown Alphabet conglomerate. He just isn't doing just Google anymore. So this is some pretty big boots that they have sucked into the military-industrial complex game. And it's a little concerning to me, especially considering some of the stuff that we've been following in regards to Google putting 5G transmitters up all over into the stratosphere across the United States for a project. And I don't know, there's been all kinds of projects now. It's really kind of convoluted as to which project is which with these aerial balloons or satellites or whatever the hell else they're launching to do quote-unquote internet service, which originally was for the third world and now all of a sudden became the U.S. I did see the other day, though, that Google is now rolling out a cell phone service to everybody, so that may be a part of it. But remember, with the cell phones and Stingray and all these other surveillance programs, they've been very, very successful. Not Google. I'm talking like the Alphabet agencies in general. They've been very successful in being able to triangulate and to follow you. And, you know, how many stories have we looked at where they've pointed out to us that our cell phone, and we've known this since day one, but maybe not to the extent that we've read about, our cell phone is the best tracking device on the planet. You take it with you everywhere. You put everything that you do, your calendaring, whatever, on there. You know, you turn it on when you wake up, you check your messages. So they are able to tell so much about a person in your daily routine just by your interaction with this tiny little device that soon will become even smaller and insertable. We won't talk about where. They want it all over. All right, so where do we continue on? I don't know. I was struggling this morning because there's probably 5 days worth of stories. And I really need to feel like pissed off about something to get all ranty. I know you guys like ranty. Some days I try to stay mellow, but ranty is more fun for me. I wasn't really sure where to start, but I figured Google's always a good one. So I ran across this the other day. Google, and I really think that this has something to do with some of the stuff that we've already talked about, like I said, with those 5G cellular in the sky to bring internet and cell phone to all the poor people who don't have it, who haven't become part of the machine yet. Google is building a big, mysterious radio transmitter in the desert. Da, da, da. Coming soon to Spaceport America, Google's newest secretive project. Spaceport America, outside Truth or Consequences in the deserts of New Mexico, has been retooling its tenant list in recent years. The facility is one big advantage for the non-rocket crowd. It has lots and lots of fiber optic communication cables just waiting to be used. It seems that Google may be making some good use of them, but exactly what they are doing is still under wraps. According to an FCC document unearthed by Brian Benchoff at Hackaday, the internet giant applied for an experimental radio license to be built in the New Mexico desert. Much of the report is redacted, seeing that I think this is the story that we read, not the story, but the project that we read about months ago, where there was the FCC filing for them to put all of these, I don't know, 5G towers in the stratosphere, but the majority of the FCC application was redacted, so you really didn't know what it was, just the frequencies. Anyway, much of the report is redacted thanks to a request for confidentiality by Google. But a few details can be sussed out. It will work in ranges typically utilized for communication devices, and that is between 2.5 gigahertz, which they're a little incorrect there. Who wrote this? Popular Mechanics. Shame on you. It's 2.4 gigahertz, Popular Mechanics. They say 2.5 and 5.8, but it is 2.4 gigahertz and 5.8 gigahertz band, which includes the high millimeter bands. And that was something we were going to do some research into at one point, because high millimeter, I had thought at the time, and I verified it, is used a lot in surveillance. And we'll dig into that, because there's a lot of frequency stuff that we kind of tiptoed over that I need to get back to really bad. I just need some focus time, so I don't get a lot of. Anyway, as Benchpoint points out, there is a transmitter in the 70 to 80 gigahertz band, and that band is not regulated much by the FCC and is typically used for high bandwidth communications and frequencies just under that range at 60 gigahertz and maybe utilized for high bandwidth wireless routers. Yeah, that are going to be able to fry you if you walk through a direct line of sight. Jeez, 60 gigahertz. But whereas those devices will use power in the watts, Google wants a 96.4 kilowatt transmitter. AM radio stations top out at about 50 kilowatts, which can reach at least 38 states. But whereas that's omnidirectional, Google wants something that also concentrates on very narrow widths. Benchoff suspects that it may be tied to the, here's one of them, the Google Project Skybender to bring internet by drone. And we read about that one a few weeks ago. Yeah, just what we need. Internet delivered by your fuzzy, friendly neighborhood drone that flies over your neighborhood 24/7 with HD cameras. And, oh, yes, beaming you internet. While others suspect Google's Project Loon and other experiments, and Loon is the balloon one, the putting the 5 gigahertz towers into the stratosphere, and other experiments in bringing internet access worldwide. Now, Popular Mechanics, I'm going to bitch slap you for this one, because even though I'm a tinfoil hat-wearing lunatic, I am not crazy. They add in here, the InfoWars crowd. Well, I don't listen to InfoWars either. I just do my research. We'll probably suspect mind control. I'm going to tell you, there's a lot to this. I have been digging up major, major scientific research that's being done on using frequencies to control thoughts and emotions and DNA. And this is all DARPA-related stuff. This isn't tinfoil hat-wearing InfoWars, okay? This is DARPA research, ElectRx program, and then go on from there. Take a look. It also says, especially with HARP being underutilized, my guess, and this is the author, oh, it must be aliens. Come on. Now, let's just tie everything to aliens to discredit it and make people look stupid. You know, I'm on to these people now and the way they play this game. I fell into that a long time ago, and I get it now. It's not about aliens. Frequencies and all this new agey sound stuff that we've always thought was kind of wacky, it actually has some validity to it. We've been looking at, right, what did we see last week? The sense of smell now, they believe, is done via vibration. You know, that's not a load of hooey. There's a lot to that. And like I said, when I get some quiet time, maybe over the next couple of weeks now, because I'm not planning on adding any new shows for a few weeks at least, I might be able to catch up before the next school vacation hits and I have to be cruise director for 10 days again. Anyway, the nearby spaceport provides a perfect landing spot, and our overlords know New Mexico by well now, having crashed so many flying saucers there. And ha ha ha, you know what? Flying saucers did not happen in New Mexico. What happened was Dugway Proving Grounds, lots of top secret military research, and trust me, I've done my digging in regards to Antarctica and the end of World War II and the Nazis and some of the technology that we were able to acquire with Paperclip. I really think that we brought that to New Mexico and Nevada, and that's a lot of what people were seeing. So, you know, they make it look like we're lunatics by thinking that something's up and there's conspiracy, but I think there's way more conspiracy and hidden things out there than there are stuff that we know about. We only just know what's on the surface. So who the hell knows? Google is in bed with the Pentagon. We've established that. Eric Schmidt is now on an advisory board, and they are working on that new hackathon. And of course, they're going to be keeping all of our infrastructure safe. But Google also gets a free pass, can request privacy on a public FCC application, get it, and now they're right in the middle of where a lot of the military secret programs happen with their big new fancy mysterious radio transmitter. So, you know, go figure. All right, well, talking about DARPA and some of the crazy research that they've been doing. And I mean, a lot of their research has been focusing on the brain, and that's where I scream caution, because our brain is what makes us. And once they discover all the ins and outs on how the brain works and how they can manipulate it, and, you know, in the beginning, it'll start with implants. We've already seen them messing with that on National Geographic, right? Live TV brain surgery for Parkinson's disease, of course. And we saw that they were messing with cockroaches as well. Remote control, push button, control the chemicals and the nerve impulses in the cockroach. You can make them fly and run anyway. We read on Friday they have the new Robo Roach Rescue Roach Robots. That's exactly what they're doing. They are learning to control insects, to use them as quote-unquote rescue vehicles of some kind, to be able to go in, put little cameras on them, microphones, send them into places where people can't go. Of course, they would never, ever, ever use a remote-controlled robo-roach with his cameras and microphones to sneak him into somebody's house, an insurgent, quote-unquote, behind a baseboard or under a sink, to do surveillance or anything now with it. No! Kind of like those, what are they called? MIT mosquitoes, Harvard, robo-bees. Robo-bees! No! The robo-bees on Harvard's website says, yes, they can be used to pollinate crops. Bullet point, bullet point, bullet point, or surveillance. Yeah, they're not going to use insects for surveillance. Well, along those same lines of modifying animals in horrifying ways to do our bidding, here's a new one. Monkeys. Monkeys learn how to ride wheelchairs using just mind power. And we're talking about the mind power, brain control, keyboard and mice, being able to put on those EEG caps and learn. We did that last week as well. Like, they could dump memories now. And, you know, they had some improvement, but they were taking the brain patterns of pilots, experienced pilots, recording them, and then playing them back to somebody who didn't have pilot experience wearing one of these EEG caps, trying to match or modulate the brain waves of the pilot with the brain waves of the pilot student. And they did see an increase in the ability to learn quickly, which is horrifying. It's really horrifying. We talked even last week about uploading and downloading memories uploading and downloading ourselves to the cloud. We found out that Google has some new patent for downloading personalities in an app store to be used on quote-unquote robots or avatars. And I could see how this could play on the future for when, you know, your future loved ones are no longer here. Let's download Nana and have a Sunday dinner. This is just beyond horrifying to me. Anyway, monkeys learn how to ride wheelchairs using mind power. U.S. scientists have developed a brain-machine interface that enables monkeys to control a wheelchair with their minds. The study highlights new opportunities, of course. It's always for the people who would give it up to the machine. New opportunities for the paralyzed. Not that this is a bad thing. Like, wouldn't it be cool? I've looked at those brain mind-controlled keyboard and mice. You know, for people like me who are running many websites and Facebook pages and editing 20 shows and, you know, all the crap that I do. My knuckles, by the end of the week, I got to tell you, if I don't do my turmeric, that keeps down inflammation. If I don't do my turmeric for a few days, my knuckles are so swollen and sore. Just because it's 30 years of being on a keyboard, I'm sure that there's repetitive stress disorder that happens. You know, I don't get that, knock on wood, I used to years ago, but I don't really get that carpal tunnel anymore. But my knuckles, man, by the end of the week, it's like I just want to hold them against my chest and go lay down somewhere if I don't do my anti-inflammatory. That would be pretty awesome, but they're really expensive. They were at least a few hundred dollars a piece the last time I looked at them. And I'm sure that they're going to come down in price, but it makes me worry because we have looked already so many times at all of these brain-computer interfaces that they're developing. And remember, it all trickles back to DARPA. And I hear diabolical, evil laughter every time I read a story about any of their research because we know the end result, the dangling carrot for them, is to crack the mysteries of the brain. Because once they've cracked the mysteries of the brain, we have Minority Report type law enforcement that they could enable. We have predictability and behavioral algorithms. You know, they're working on all that stuff where they can predict your future behavior. We have, you know, as they're learning how neurons interact, we saw some sort of Google stent the other day that they could slip up into an artery. And it's got electronics that can connect to individual neurons to be able to read your thoughts. I mean, guys, anything. The new Google contact lens, and there was some other eye thing that they came out with, you know, direct connect to the brain through the optic nerve. We also had those dopamine headphones that stimulated the vagus nerve to release brain chemicals to make you high as a kite on demand. You know, this is all part of this mad science research. So once they get it to where they understand the interworkings and the interrelationships between all the pieces, it'll be just push button mind control at an instant. And as we use their consumer devices that they put out with some of the new technologies, don't think that they're not surveilling them. You know, we looked at the video games on the Xbox. I think it was the Xbox 360 with the camera, the Kinect's camera on it. And they've been surveilling people and recording interactions with that to try to find, you know, who the best future drone pilots might be, let's say. Don't think that that isn't going to become something more and more commonplace than it already is, especially bringing someone like Eric Schmidt, head honcho of all of Alphabet, into the Pentagon to help with all these other projects. You know, let's keep America safe. Well, part of keeping America safe is doing behavioral analytics on everybody all the time with everything. So, I don't know, a little ranty there, but I would really love to get a mind control keyboard and mouse. Except that by putting something like that, and it's, this doesn't use one of those skull caps, the EG skull caps, though some of the early models did. I've seen a lot of them now where it's just a little headband. Just goes right around your temples, just a little headband. And you could just think and blink and, you know, you probably have to train it. I don't know. I would imagine it would have to learn your brain waves. But they're logging, bagging, and tagging that information. They're mapping your brain. They're watching your habits and how you do things. That information is going somewhere. I could guarantee you it's going somewhere. You know, they've gotten to the point now. I spent many years doing dashboards. That's my big thing, is finding data, disparate data, making it into something nice, making a big informational portal out of it. I worked in corporate America. I worked for the executive vice presidents. Okay, that was my job. After I left engineering, that's what I did. And that was my job, was to be able to provide statistics and real-time business information to the guys that ran the show. Okay, to business in the 21st century. That's what it was all about. You know what? The faster you can get the information as to what your company is doing or whatever your tracking is doing, especially if it's on a real-time dashboard, all on your screen so you can see correlations between all the different facets of what you're dealing with, that makes you very powerful. That makes you omniscient, omnipresent. You're able to make business decisions very quickly, or law enforcement decisions if you happen to be on the law enforcement end of the dashboards. Remember, Microsoft has gone completely apeshit crazy with their back-end surveillance now, selling Cyber Patrol Center services to all of the police global. And I'm not just talking United States, global police forces. Alphabet agencies, they're watching everything. Why do you think the Force Windows 10 upgrade is coming? Because you know what? They got problems with old computers like I have here with Windows XP on it. Actually, this one's got Vista on it. Got a couple with Windows 7. Got one with Windows XP. But you know, that makes it too difficult for them, and I'm sure, even though they all had back doors, there were some of those older operating systems, they couldn't collect all of the telemetry data like they are in Windows 10. Windows 10, read up about it. Do a couple searches. There were a few tech articles out there when Windows 10 first rolled out where they were actually tracking all the incoming and outgoing requests through the internet to the operating system and data that was being sent. And it was astonishing. There were hundreds of connections, incoming and outgoing, that were sending and receiving data about what you were doing. So trust me on that. It is about full-blown surveillance of everything, all being databased, bagged and tagged, and put into a dashboard. End result is going to be that they will be able to predict anything and everything in the future. Minority Report will be here sooner than we know it. Anyway, all right, so I've gotten completely off the track. Let's get back to this mind-controlled wheelchair monkey. Oh, no. Hope I don't start a fire. Okay. Researchers from Duke University, North Carolina, it developed a device to interpret the brain's cortical activity and produce wheelchair movements. Their article in Nature's Scientific Report reads, the gear was tested on two rhesus monkeys implanted. So they didn't even do like a headband thing. They did an implant. Implanted with a wireless neuron activity recorder. The simians were motivated by what? Oh, not dangling carrots. They were motivated by grapes. At first, the monkeys were driven around in powered wheelchairs with their brains' impulses recorded by an intracranial scanner, which later allowed for creating a steering algorithm. So that is exactly what they did. They were able to record the brain waves and see what sections flashed on and off when the monkey itself was looking at direction. And then once they trained their application as to what areas of the brain, then they could take control. Test runs were made in straight lines. Monkeys were put in three different locations, while the food dispenser always stayed in the same spot. The trajectories were distorted by making corrections and turning and oversteering. And after the monkeys had mastered the basic technique, backward movements were added as well, and all tests proved successful. The present results support our recent clinical observation that when paraplegic patients are subjected to intense BMI training, and that is this brain management interface, they're doing a lot with that with biofeedback. If you remember back from the 60s, I think, 60s and 70s, they were dealing a lot with biofeedback, being able to control bodily, involuntary bodily functions such as heart rate and things by being able to connect yourself up to electrodes, let's say, and then there is a computer representation of what those internal bodily systems are doing. And then by being able to see that dashboard, it's like a dashboard of your brain waves, see what level, alpha, theta, delta, what level of brain waves that you're in, your waking state, you can then consciously try to manipulate those brainwave states by watching what happens when you do different things like deep breathing exercises or relaxing. That was the biofeedback. And I've seen a couple stories over the last few weeks now about that very technology again being utilized to help, you know, make you healthier, make you better. And, you know, it's scary when you think about all the things that we've been looking at recently in regards to, you know, we started with the Fitbit and the wearables, and let's track, let's stay healthy, let's follow how many steps we've made and how many calories we've burned. You know, and the next it's going to be, well, you know, let's take a look at what our blood levels are. We have all these biosensors that they're working on. Well, let's see, you know, what hormones we have and whether or not you have too many white blood cells. And eventually, they are aiming at the nanobots in your bloodstream. And that's not a joke. That's not a tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy. That's something that Google Alphabet is working on. The nanobots in your blood to be able to detect real time and wirelessly transmit that to your doctor when it starts to detect that you're getting ill. Now, since we're talking about the monkeys, and I don't know, actually, I don't know if I'm going to get, we're not going to get into mind control today. Maybe we'll do that tomorrow. Let's stick on robots. All right, so mind control, wheelchairs. I don't know, they might already have something kind of like that. Stephen Hawking, I think he might actually still have a lever on his wheelchair. So maybe Stephen Hawking should help them out with this. I wonder what his thoughts are about reading brainwaves to move your wheelchair. It's a story that came out on the 4th. Brand new breakthrough for robots. Soft robot breakthrough. Artificial, quote-unquote, octopus skin stretches to 6 times its original size, as well as changes color, just like octopi can. Robots may be the future, but scientists are looking to sea-dwelling octopuses. Did they really make the plural of octopus octopuses in RT? I'm pretty certain it's octopi. Maybe not, but I like it better. Scientists are looking to sea-dwelling octopi and squid in order to learn to design them. A newly created artificial octopus skin can actually stretch and change color, much like the intelligent cephalopods can. And what's more, the development could be a boon to a variety of different types of robots and products in numerous fields, including healthcare. consumer electronics, and even rescue teams. Yay! According to the Cornell University team behind the invention, the effort was inspired by creatures like the octopus, which can stretch and even change the texture of their skin to fit into hard-to-reach places. You know, they're doing a lot of this hard-to-reach place robot thing, it seems to me. Hard-to-reach places such as what? Oh, under baseboards and kitchen sinks. The new electroluminescent skin can stretch more than 6 times its original size, bend, and display changing colors at the same time. Remember I told you that is the way these people are doing it. They are usurping nature. They are copying. They were trying to do stuff that was completely whacked out. I remember back in the beginning of bipedal robot research, they had all these crazy designs. And the best design, the most stable design for a two-legged robot happened to be once they mimic nature. And the original legs looked like those of an ostrich or an emu. Emus are ancient creatures too. But it was able to stay stable. And now we see Atlas, man. Atlas 2 is a scary beast coming to a Google car near you. Robert Shepard, the research leader of the group, said that the hope is to use technology and soft robots, or robots that are made with flexible materials so that they can move more easily without breaking and interact more safely with humans. Yeah, be a squishy robot that can change colors on demand. Good for consumers. As you can see in this 1.5 minute video, and we're not going to watch it, but I will have the story in the notes so you can watch it if you want. This small soft robot prototype is able to bend and stretch on its own as it moves across a hard surface, all the while flashing in 3 different colors. And parts of the material can also inflate to mimic the quote-unquote walking motion of a worm so it can move. And you know what he's talking about with the worm, where they, you know, the beginning part of the worm moves forward and then the back part pulls itself along. It says, we could take these pixels that change color and put them on these robots, and now we have the ability to change their color, said the lead researcher. Why is that important? Well, yeah, it's because the dumb American consumer public loves day glow pink, green, and orange. Why is that important? Well, for one thing, when robots become more and more a part of our lives, the ability for them to have an emotional connection with us will be important. So to be able to change their color in response to mood. Uh-oh. I just lost where I was. In response to mood will be important. Or to the tone of the room. It's something that'll be important for robot-human interactions. And remember, they have to get over that resistant consumer thing. Most people, we discovered, are still not too comfortable with robots, especially the more human they look. So if we can make them do, like, kitschy things, like, you know, how Apple went from being $5 a share to a couple $100 a share. They just came out with that all-in-one Apple computer in the pretty kitschy colors, and it sold like hotcakes. Yeah, that's all they got to do. Potentially, material like this could be used to create wearable technologies. Oh, my God. Like wearable octopi technology. Right now, mostly limited to bracelet-like products such as, oh, look, the Apple Watch or the Fitbit that can conform to the shape of an individual's body and, oh, loaded with sensors. We could have a rubber band that goes around your arm that also displays info, says Chris Larson, a Cornell graduate student who is part of this team. You could be in a meeting and have a rubber band-like device on your arm and could be checking your email. Oh, look at the convenience. It's so convenient. And that is obviously the future, but it is the direction that we are looking in, he says. Scientists are also intrigued by the possibility of using soft robots as part of rescue teams. Ding, ding. And, you know, they've had these soft, squishy rescue robots in development for a long time. Again, that was a DARPA project that I saw for all their new robots they were rolling out. And one was like this squishy squid thing that climbed up walls silently. So since they may be able to move through rubble more safely than humans. Notably, this isn't the only technology influenced by cephalopods like an octopus, another kind of synthetic material developed in 2014, and could also change color and its texture when hit with electricity. Dun, dun, dun. You know, it just kills me because many of these stories that we're reading as they now roll out in pseudo mainstream publications such as RT or Popular Electronics or whatever that was. The other one was Popular Mechanics or, you know, whatever. The mainstream pseudoscience publications. What gets me is that we've read about a lot of these technologies months, even years before, under the guise of DARPA. Remember, I do DARPA scrapes. Anything DARPA, lately I've kind of been slacking off. I haven't had time really to check all my email accounts daily. But the majority of the time, we've read about these technologies way back in the beginning DARPA days of prototyping. And that was another one of those. And speaking of DARPA, here was another one that we read about quite a number of years ago from DARPA, person on a chip. Engineers now grow 3D hearts, liver tissues for better drug testing. Researchers at the University of Toronto Engineering have developed a new way. And remember, the University of Toronto, I don't know if it was, it actually wasn't the University of Toronto, but Canada has come up now a couple times, a few of the universities in Canada, for sending us some good old brain scientists to help with some of this brain project stuff on Google's end. Google DARPA, remember, they're connected at the hip, so it's all one and the same. Researchers at the University of Toronto Engineering have developed a new way to grow realistic human tissues outside of the body. Their person-on-a-chip technology, called AngioChip, is a powerful platform for discovering and testing new drugs and could eventually be used to repair or replace damaged organs. Yeah, that's all it's going to be used for. What could go wrong? Professor Miliska Radzikic, I don't even know, Miliska Radzikic, graduate student Boyang Zhang, and the rest of the team are among those research groups around the world racing to find ways to grow human tissues in the lab under conditions that mimic a real person's body. They have developed unique methods for manufacturing small, intricate scaffolds for individual cells to grow on. These artificial environments produce cells and tissues that resemble the real thing more closely than those grown lying flat in a petri dish. And actually, we did a story not too long ago about the actual mini human brain, a little mini human brain that was grown in a dish, just like a brain, except it was a little mini human brain. Then we found the brain balls the other day, too. And it's very frightening. And now that they can coax skin stem cells into just about any organ, and I was just reading now, there's some other new way that they're coaxing these plurbient. I need to see the word to say it, but pluripuent, I don't know. Let point and laugh. Pluripubescent. Some sort of pluri, like real early stem cells that they literally can turn into anything at all. They now have been learning to manipulate. You know, when we put all these little puzzle pieces together, this is not a good future that we are forming here at all. At all. We talked on Friday about the new biological computers using ATP, the cell energy to be able to power these things. And this is literally transhumanism in your face, the beginnings merging, man and machine. And add to this the CRISPR-Cas9 technology slicing and dicing our genes and flipping RNA and DNA switches. We got a big problem, Clyde. Genies are out everywhere. And it is absolute utter mayhem. The team's creations have included BioWire, which is a trademarked term and says by the little symbol next to it, an innovative method of growing heart cells around a silk suture, as well as a scaffold for heart cells that snap together like sheets of Velcro. But AngioChip takes tissue engineering to a whole new level. It is a fully three-dimensional structure complete with internal blood vessels, says Radisic. It behaves just like vasculature, and around it there is a lattice for other cells to attach and grow. This work is published today in the journal Nature Materials. Zhang built the scaffold out of POMAC, which spelled capital P-O-M, small a, capital C, which is a polymer that is both biodegradable and biocompatible. So, I mean, in the beginning, they were using sugars. I don't know if POMAC is a sugar or not, but same concept, something biodegradable and biocompatible. So once they get the stem cells, they use the scaffold to build the proper shape, let's say, when they're making transplantable organs. Then they coax the stem cells to be whatever organ they want to grow. And then they let them start growing on that scaffold that then dissolves. It's the biodegradable and biocompatible scaffolding. So in the end, when the organ is grown and functional, there is no more scaffolding. The scaffold is built out of a series of thin layers stamped with a pattern of channels that are around 50 to 100 micrometers wide. The layers, which resemble computer microchips, are then stacked into a 3D structure of synthetic blood vessels. As each layer is added, UV light is used to cross-link the polymer and bond it to the layer below. That's interesting that they're using UV light, just like in the development of life. Over the course of evolution's millions of years, getting UV from the sun to help move things along. I don't know. It's kind of a neat thing that they need UV to bond those together. And when the structure is finished, it is bathed in a liquid containing living cells. The cells quickly attach to the inside and the outside of the channels and begin growing just as they would in the human body. Previously, people could only do this using devices that squish the cells between sheets of silicone and glass. Says Radisic, you would need several pumps and vacuum lines to run just one chip. Our system runs in a normal cell culture dish. There are no pumps. We use pressure heads to perfuse the media through the vasculature, and the wells are wide open so you can easily access the tissue. Using this platform, the team has built model versions of both the heart and the liver tissues that function just like the real thing. Our liver actually produced urea and metabolized drugs, says Radisic. Oh my God. And they can connect the blood vessels of the two artificial organs, thereby modeling not just the organs themselves, but the interactions between them. Do you guys see? Like, this is the first real steps to be able to build some sort of human-machine hybrid. Some sort of machine that has actual functioning biological organs inside of it. This is what, in Battlestar Galactica, they called the skin job. I actually saw two. Oh, let's finish this. There's only a couple more paragraphs here. They can connect the blood vessels of the two artificial organs, thereby modeling not just the organs themselves, but the interactions between them. They've even injected white blood cells into the vessels and watched as they squeeze through the gaps into the vessel walls to reach the tissue on the other side, just like they do in the human body. The Angio chip, of course, has great potential in the field of pharmaceutical testing. Big Pharma is salivating. Current drug testing methods, such as animal testing and controlled clinical trials, are costly and fraught with ethical concerns, of course. You know, like we've talked about, all those ethical concerns using this DNA switch-flipping mad science gone mad vaccines and such. They only are able to use them when they've declared an emergency. And I mean, we've had what? Measles, Ebola, bird flu. What, you know, how many more diseases? What was the newest one? I don't even remember. I'm not even paying attention to that stuff anymore because it's just so ridiculous. But we had Project BioShield, remember? So every time there's a massive emergency declared and we don't have enough quote-unquote vaccine to cure it, we now can use all these untested drugs. But they're fraught with ethical concerns because, you know, here in the United States, we don't do med science research on humans. Only the desperate and the dying per the 21st Century Cures Act that's coming. We need to look that up too and see if that has progressed through Congress at all in the recent past. So, of course, by using something like this, it'll make it much easier for Big Pharma to start testing their mad science drugs on human components. More realistic platforms like the Angio chips could enable drug companies to detect dangerous side effects and interactions between organ compartments long before their products reach the market. Keep cutting down on lawsuits. Saving, of course, countless lives. It's all about you. It could also be used to understand and validate the effectiveness of current drugs and even to screen libraries of chemical compounds to discover new drugs. Through Terra, T-A-R-A, Biosystems, Inc., a spinoff company co-founded by Radisic. And remember, that's how they do it. They sprinkle DARPA money. They come up with a product. They create a new company. They put out an IPO. Everybody makes bazillions of dollars. And then the technology is launched upon the unsuspecting public. So Terra Biosystems, a spinoff company co-founded by Radisic, the team is already working on commercializing the technology. What I want to know is all these corporations that are springing up that were formed in universities using sprinkle tax dollars that you and me and Nana and Grandpa and Mom and Dad and everybody else, Aunt Helen, contributed. When these public companies spin off and make bazillions of dollars for the pharmaceutical companies, why isn't the American public getting a kickback of profits? Shouldn't we be getting some sort of profit sharing? We were venture funding capitalists. Venture capitalists, that's what they're called, VCs. The federal government was a venture capitalist for these universities, for these smart kids, for our children selling us out to the machine to create these new mad science technologies. Yet, we, the American coffers that are in negative numbers right now, don't get any type of kickback from that to put toward future research. It's just an endless, amazingly endless pot of printed money, it seems. In the future, Radisic envisions our lab-grown tissues being implanted into bodies to repair organs damaged by disease because the cells used to seed the platform can come from anyone. The new tissues could be genetically identical to the intended host, reducing the risk of organ rejection. Even in its current form, the team has shown that the Angio chip can be implanted, into a living animal. And its artificial blood vessels connected to a real circulatory system. The polymer scaffolding itself simply biodegrades after several months. Well, how interesting is that? We can implant these Angio chips as well. The team still has much work to do And each Angio chip is currently made by hand. Well, don't worry about that, because I'm sure that they'll figure out a way to use the origami method of manufacturing like they've been using with the RoboBees. And I saw some new surgical scary-looking instruments with little tweezer thingies on the ends. If the platform is to be used industrially, the team will need to develop a high throughput manufacturing process to create many copies at once. That was the same problem they had with RoboBees. Don't worry about it, guys. They'll figure it out. All right, we got about 2 minutes left, and I don't think we're going to be able to finish all these robo stories, but maybe we'll end up here. What's happened? Well, we have all this, like, feeling robot skin now. There was a story yesterday, but check this out. Watch. Meet Nadine, the emotionally intelligent, quote-unquote, companion robot. Da-da-da. It's happened, people. Nadine is here to look after you. Wink. What will robots look like in the future? And will they regain obvious signs of their artificial nature, or will they seamlessly blend in with people to such an extent that we might have difficulty telling them apart from living, breathing beings? Well, remember, we read about that the other day. People feel uncomfortable about that. Well, don't worry about that, because Nadine will win your heart. If Nadine, a new social and emotionally intelligent robot from scientists in Singapore, is a sign of things to come, realistic looking humanoid machines might just have the edge over their obviously artificial counterparts like the R2-D2 robots. How come? Well, because their physical resemblance to ordinary people could help us interact with the machine in more natural ways, whether it be at home, at work, or even if they were to look after us when they get old. And what they didn't end here was as a sex bot. Because you know that's where this is going. Don't worry about reproducing. You have a sex bot. Oh, my God. I wish I could play this, but we're running out of time. Maybe this is where we kick it off tomorrow, as good old Nadine, the emotionally intelligent and conversing robot. And the video is very frightening because she comes up with her own responses to anything that is asked of her. If you've seen the TV show Humans, you have an idea of what these systems could look like. It might be a little while before robots like Nadine are convincing as human synths, but that day definitely looks like it's getting closer. All right, guys, make sure you stick around, because that's the end of the show. It is Wednesday, so we have Josh live at 6. Next, Lonnie Clark live.